Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, October 5th. Despite everything else going on, it is the first Monday in October, and that means the Supreme Court starts its new term today. And for the first time in almost 30 years, the term starts without Justice Ginsburg on the bench. The rush to confirm President Trump's nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, is still on. There was a decision recently that electors from the Electoral College are not bound to vote for a winning candidate who then dies. Interesting that that took place in a decision this summer. And there are new questions about Trump having potential liability for infecting people in New Jersey last week, as we were discussing in our last segment, after he knew he might have COVID but didn't tell the people attending his fundraiser. So not much to talk about this morning with Jamie Floyd, senior editor of WNYC's Race and Justice Unit and years-long Supreme Court watcher here on this show and elsewhere. Good morning, Jamie.
Hello, Brian.
So the Amy Coney Barrett hearings can be done remotely, we were told by Jonathan Lemire, but the vote by the full Senate, if it gets to that, is a little trickier since the rules require that that be done in person. Mm-hmm. Could McConnell lose his majority on this because a few of these senators have now tested positive for COVID after attending the Coney Barrett event?
Yeah, well, you are correct. As is Jonathan, they can do the hearing itself remotely, but I'd say even that is tricky because while the hearings can be remote, we know that coronavirus is unpredictable. So it assumes that senators are not so sick that they can't participate remotely, which could be the case since this disease can make some people very, very sick. You know, others exhibit very mild symptoms. They can keep working. But some people get so sick they cannot lift their head off the pillow. So we've got two senators, Tom Tillis, North Carolina, Mike Lee, Utah, both testing positive. And you're right, Senator Mitch McConnell saying it's full steam ahead with these hearings. But even the remote Judiciary Committee hearing, I think, is in jeopardy. But let's assume he can manage to do that remotely. Nobody else gets sick. Nobody gets so sick that they can't participate remotely. And nobody, Brian, succumbs because this is a deadly illness. You're right. Once they have to come back to the floor, they've got to vote in person. The rules require actual in-person voting for the actual confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett. And if these two, Tillis and Lee, Senators Tillis and Lee, either are still too sick to come back to the floor, or if any other senator comes down with the virus, we are now postponed and we don't have enough senators to make the vote on the floor. And that is, I would say, somewhat likely or even probable. So the thing, I think, is quite in jeopardy. I think it's a close call as to whether the Republicans are going to have enough people on the committee to vote to move her to the full chamber. And I think it's also highly likely that Democrats now will be able to delay this. And for good reason, we're talking about a life-threatening illness taking some senators out of commission.
Do you happen to know if Mitch McConnell and his Senate majority could just change the rules to allow senators to vote in absentia? I believe Nancy Pelosi and her House majority changed the rules just this year because of COVID. So House members could vote remotely, I think.
Well, I'm not. I didn't work in the Senate. My husband worked in the Senate, though, so I asked him this question over the weekend. They can change the rules, Brian, but to change the rules, they have to vote on changing the rules. So they run into a sort of a circular problem because they don't have the members in the Judiciary Committee. They could change the rules, but they don't have the members within the committee to vote to change the rules within the committee. And then same problem on the floor. So it becomes a problem of circular logic. That's my limited understanding of the ways in which the very complicated rules of the Senate work.
A circular firing squad that engages in circular logic. So Let's move on to the implications of when Amy Coney Barrett might be confirmed. If she's confirmed before the election, would she be part of any cases that arise over counting ballots, for example?
Yes, yes, she could. Now, a lot of this depends on when she's confirmed, and it also depends on whether and how Chief Justice Roberts... first of all, it depends on when she's confirmed. It depends on when and how the election cases come down. So if you cast your mind back to the year 2000 and Bush versus Gore and the incredible furiosity and flurry of the election decisions that were coming down to the court, several came to the U.S. Supreme Court more than once, and then the final one, I think, around December 18th. But a lot of it is the timing of the election cases and the way in which they make their way to the court. And then there's the way in which Justice Roberts would choose to calendar all of that, when and whether Amy Coney Barrett is there. Because now, unlike 2000, the year 2000, we would have a 4-4 possible split. So, but then there's the case itself. You're asking about what would those cases be. So the justices, including Amy Coney Barrett, might be asked to resolve disputes that arise after what we know will be a very complicated election day, including any case that might determine who wins, like the court did back in 2000. That was a dispute about the counting of votes cast by punching holes on little computer red cards, but now we're talking about counting the mail-in ballots or in response to election day disruptions caused by, you know, say a natural disaster or state computer system failures, all kinds of things. Even the constant refrain from President Trump's team about the claims of fraud in the mail-in voting system, there will be challenges, I would say, from one or both sides that the court will be asked to resolve. The question of whether Amy Coney Barrett is there, you know, we've addressed that, and I cannot answer it beyond what I've given you.
Now, one of the big cases that we know she would be a part of if she's confirmed early enough is another challenge to Obamacare, and her judicial record suggests that, constitutionally speaking, she's not a fan. Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say. I mean, she's supposed to be asked about it if and when she ever gets to this hearing, virtual or real. And here we are again with Obamacare. Quick primer, the Supreme Court first upheld this case, John Roberts rather infamously writing that opinion in 2012. And he said that the provision that we're now looking at again was a legitimate exercise of Congress's taxing authority. The provision that's at issue is the individual mandate. So then in 2017, the Republicans set that tax penalty that Justice Roberts had upheld at zero. So the red states then argued that the tax was effectively eliminated, and they say now that the law cannot be saved, that this is a tax and therefore an unconstitutional effort to require all Americans to obtain something. It's unconstitutional, therefore, and a federal judge in Texas has agreed. And then the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld that ruling. And so that brings us back once again, Brian, where we seem to be every time I speak to you on the first Monday in October, to Obamacare. And yeah. Amy Coney Barrett has indicated, as most conservative jurists do, that she is not a fan of Obamacare. The problem, I'm just going to say as a legal analyst, with this constant attack on Obamacare is that it is political activism, you know, ironic political activism, when conservative jurists are supposed to be against political activism. You know, they criticize judges like Thurgood Marshall and Justice Brennan and judges like Sotomayor on the left for being political activists. But this constant attack on Obamacare is political activism. If you don't like this law, change it in the legislature. Stop attacking it in the courts. The law was passed. It serves Americans. This attack in the courts is just petty political activism. She has indicated that she doesn't like it. There was recently a moot court that she participated in, and the judges on that moot court let it stand. So maybe her activism will not come to the fore when she serves on the U.S. Supreme Court. But I really think that this has got to stop, because the American people, if they don't like it, can vote in a legislature in the U.S. Capitol that can strike it down. And that is not what they've chosen to do.
It's an interesting point about the irony, with conservative justices usually being the ones who say, hey, this was not in the Constitution, that's not in the Constitution. Well, it certainly was not in the Constitution for the originalists to find what kind of healthcare system it's acceptable to create for the American people. But let's go on to another case. One is a voting rights dispute that they took up Friday over ballot harvesting, quote unquote, in Arizona, and whether it's aimed specifically at Black and Latino voters. Can you describe that case?
Yes. It's a question about whether ballot harvesting is a commonplace practice. It's out of Arizona. As you say, there are two cases essentially out of Arizona that they're joining. Also happens in other states. And the claim is whether this causes election fraud, or whether these policies can be race neutral. And the Ninth Circuit is taking a look at whether or not this threatens ordinary election rules. Now, the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, is asking the justices to stay out of this, claiming that Arizona's is simply trying to disenfranchise minority voters and really wants the court to stay out of the election at this point. But the decision to grant review is really significant, Bryant, not only for election law, but also for the emergency election law appeals that could come to the court, as we were just discussing, in the weeks leading up to the election. It gives the justices an opportunity, I think, to clarify two areas of uncertainty in voting law. How are they going to weigh the burdens that states are going to impose on voting in this moment, the benefits of this practice, and also whether this section of the voting rights law applies to the denial of voting at all. So there's a substantive issue and there's a procedural issue. And the grant of this review also suggests that they are going to get involved in a rather rigorous way in this election that we are about to walk into. So the justices clearly regard these questions of voting rights as worthy of their attention. The question is whether or not they will listen to Democrats who are asking them not to get to put their fingers into the pie too much, too early in the process.
And let's take a phone call now from Susan in Astoria. Hi, Susan. You're on WNYC.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. So my question is, I guess for the guest, even if the Republican Senate doesn't confirm this Justice Barrett before the election, are they free to confirm her any time up until the inauguration on the 19th or 20th of January, 2021? And I'll go off and take your answer on the radio.
Thank you, Susan.
Great question. Yes. And through this session, they are free to confirm her. As we saw with the Merrick Garland, the poor man, his name keeps coming up. He will live on, even though he was not confirmed. So, yes, they can. And then when a new Congress and Senate comes in, they lose the opportunity. And whether or not President Trump is reelected, they lose the opportunity to confirm her. President Trump could nominate her again, and then a new Congress and or Senate could confirm or perhaps not have the votes to confirm her. But the nomination would have to be made anew if President Trump were reelected, or, of course, if President Biden were reelected, the nomination would fail. Were elected, the nomination would fail. So it's good through this term, and then basically the deck is cleared, and we start all over with the next Congress.
Yeah, it's good through this term, which I guess means it's good through the end of the year, because I think the new Senate is sworn in just after New Year's, so that's a few weeks
Correct.
Before the inauguration. But up until then, can you imagine? This is a political question, not a legal question, but can you imagine if Biden wins and the Democrats win control of the Senate, that the Republicans would go through with this confirmation anyway?
No, I really can't. I really can't. And I also think, you know, politics is the art of the possible. I can't quite recall what brilliant person said that. It's a very famous quote. And, you know, it's not about the legal, and it's not about the theoretical. It really is about what you can get done now. And I think that is why Mitch McConnell is wanting to get going on the 12th. And Brian, I don't know if I said it, but that hearing, when and if it happens on October 12th, would be just 10 days after the nomination ceremony in the Rose Garden and inside the White House, by the way, much of it inside, which is why people, I'm going to posit, I'm not an epidemiologist, but people are getting sick. And so he's rushing it because he realizes that if he doesn't get it moving by the 12th, it's not going to happen, despite our caller's question about whether in theory it could happen. The art of the possible suggests that he needs to start a week from today or it's not going to happen because, you know, then the vote has to happen and then we're pretty much out of session thereafter.
So speaking of people getting sick, do you think that there's the possibility that the president or even other members of his family could face liability claims, either civil or criminal? From the reporting, it sounds like he had symptoms already when he went to his Bedminster, New Jersey event on Thursday and knew Hope Hicks had tested positive. And of course, he went without a mask. There were more than 200 people there. This event was partly indoors. You and I had an exchange about this over the weekend. I pointed out a case in New Jersey, an actual case that NPR reported on in May, where a home health aide got criminally charged for exposing an 80-year-old client while she was waiting for a COVID test result, which turned out to be positive, without because she didn't disclose it to the client.
Right. Well, there is not a lot of precedent for this kind of thing. But as you say, Brian, there is some. And you and I were talking about that case filed in New Jersey recently. And I was just discussing it also with our New Jersey editor, Nancy Solomon, who's looking into it as well, in which the home health aide was accused, stands accused now, of failing to self-isolate after she took that coronavirus screening. She is facing criminal charges after five people in the household in which you work tested positive for coronavirus, and the 80-year-old patient did die of COVID-19. The aide has been arrested and charged in Camden, and the charges are endangering welfare charges. But, Brian, the case is still working its way through the court, and it's early days in COVID in terms of what kinds of cases may arise. But anyone who openly flouts Governor Murphy's stay-at-home order or the mandated closure of non-essential businesses and retail where required is facing possible consequences from the top law enforcement officer, Gabriel Grewal. And those really were orders having to do with bars and restaurants, but also large house parties. And so I could see it applying to a fundraiser like the one we saw in Bedminster.
Lenny in Teaneck, you're on WNYC with Jamie Floyd. Hi, Lenny.
Hi. Hi, Brian. I have a question for your guest.
Yep.
I'm wondering if the two senators who are ill can resign and whether the committee can then appoint two new members of the committee. And I'll take the answer off the air.
So whether they can resign from the Judiciary Committee so that McConnell could have his majority to go forward with the hearings with, I guess is the question.
Right. So he's asking about Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina and Mike Lee of Utah, and the answer is no. Not in short enough. It's a very clever question, thinking like McConnell. But not in short enough order. It would take, basically, the answer is, again, the art of the possible. The process would take too long, and the replacement senators, first of all, I don't think McConnell can replace senators. I think that has to be done within the state. And the process would take too long, and we basically have to get moving on confirming Coney Barrett by the time those replacement senators were in place.
I think that Lenny's question is a little narrower than that, actually, which is, yeah, can they resign from the Judiciary Committee?
And move them up within.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay, I understand. I mentioned that I did not work on Capitol Hill, but my husband worked for a senator. So I asked that very same question this weekend. Can't McConnell simply replace members of the Judiciary Committee as he sees fit? The answer to that is no. The rules for who sits on the committees are very specific. It has to do with seniority. They rise up based on their various levels of experience and really a lot to do with power. They select their committees. They're appointed based on what they've done in the Senate. So, no, Mitch McConnell, he has a lot to do with it, but he doesn't just hand pick. And he can't just have Tillis and Lee, even if they were willing to, resign and pop some people into those seats to get this job done. It's just not going to happen.
Before you go, Now that I've said that,
I'll be back next week to talk about the two replacements. No, that's just not how it works in the Senate. It's very Machiavellian and somewhat Byzantine. So the answer is no. But it's an excellent question.
Before you go, let me get to at least one more Supreme Court case that I think is on the docket, and you can throw in any other one that you have your eye on as their term begins today. Are they going to be tasked with figuring out whether the government has to count non-citizens who are counted in the census as they figure out redistricting of the House of Representatives next year?
My sense of that case is that John Roberts may put that over. So what he did last year, you'll remember, Brian, because they are still remote. The Supreme Court is also still remote this fall, starting today.
Uh-huh.
And they are taking all of their arguments via telephone conference. So anyone who is a geek like me can listen in. So that continues to be a novelty this term. And I believe that case, I may be wrong about this. This is one where I am really going out on a limb. He may put that case over. He and the other justices put a number of cases over in the spring because of COVID and the remote nature of the arguments. And some of the cases were put over to now, the fall, which is going to require that some additional cases be put over to the spring or to the next term, 21-22. Now, with the census, he can't do that because of the extreme urgency of the case, but I think he may hold at least until Amy Barrett or a new justice, whoever that may be, is in place, because the eight-person Supreme Court is a very difficult one to have vote on such an important matter. So that, I think, we may wait on. There are a couple cases that I do think are critically important to mention. We talked about Obamacare. There's a very terribly important case involving death penalty and juveniles that the court is hearing this month. And there also is a case involving young terrorist who is asking the court to review his habeas petition. So I'll bring that up with you again, Brian, when it comes up in argument, and we can talk about it in great detail when the court actually hears the case.
WNYC senior editor for Race and Justice, Jamie Floyd. Jamie, thanks as always.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.